The sight of Crater Lake, that lake in a volcano in Oregon's only full national park, can take the breath away. Wow, you think, look at that blue water in a setting that looks untouched by humans. Oh, it's been touched. In ways that alter the ecosystem of the lake, and now the price is being paid, because animals introduced to the lake are getting the upper hand, or claw, on creatures that found their way there naturally. We'll talk about crayfish in this segment and why there's such a concern in Crater Lake. Two guests, Mark Buktenica is an aquatic ecologist and limnologist at Crater Lake National Park. He's in the studio with me. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. And on the phone, Scott Gerdner, who's a fisheries biologist and limnologist at Crater Lake National Park. Welcome, Scott.
Good morning.
So, Mark, do we even know what the native fauna was in the lake before white people arrived?
We don't really know all the fauna that existed in Crater Lake before Europeans came onto the scene. Crater Lake was first campaigning to make Crater Lake a national park in 1886. And the man who spent over 20 years of his life to establish Crater Lake as a national park actually is responsible for introducing fish and crayfish to the Crater Lake ecosystem, decisions that, like you mentioned, have changed the ecology irrevocably.
What about, so there were some things there living, I mean, there was some native fauna in the lake?
Yeah, there was native fauna, and of course there still is native fauna. Before fish and crayfish were introduced to the lake, salamanders would have been the top predator in the lake. And so undoubtedly we had many more salamanders and amphibians in the lake, probably a greater diversity of aquatic insects on the bottom of the lake, and different zooplankton out in the middle of the lake.
But no fish? No fish?
No fish. Mm. No, the lake was naturally fishless.
Hmm.
And in 1915, they introduced crayfish as food for the introduced fish.
Ah, so what, they put kokanee salmon in there and then crayfish followed?
Yeah, exactly. Rainbow trout from the Rogue River were first introduced in 1888 and followed by several species of trout and salmon, including kokanee. And the only two that remain in the lake today are kokanee salmon and rainbow trout.
So I would imagine that there are some things about the lake itself, its depth, its elevation, that would probably keep a lid on what's able to live there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a high mountain lake. It's a small closed basin, so it doesn't have any rivers flowing into the lake or flowing out of the lake up on the lake surface. So that really isolates the lake from a great deal of biology.
Scott Gerdner, give us an idea of how delicate the food webs are in a place like this and what happens when we disturb those food webs.
Well, I think probably the biggest impact that the introduction of species has had has especially been on the zooplankton of the lake with the introduction of kokanee salmon. Kokanee salmon are plankton eaters, just like sockeye salmon. And prior to that, there were no big planktivores in the lake at all. But now with kokanee, which have a very distinct boom and bust period, they can actually eat all of the largest zooplankton out of the lake when their population's really high, and then the kokanee crash through time over a period of about 8 years, and eventually some of those plankton come back, and then the cycle starts all over again, with the fish have another big boom, and that's a pretty significant impact on a lake system like this that used to have no planktivores in the past.
Hmm. So they're not very good at self-regulation at all from the sounds of it. They eat everything that's there, and then when there's nothing left to eat, they die.
Yeah, they eat the biggest things, the things that they can actually see, so just the largest zooplankton get eaten. But, they eat themselves out of house and home and then die off, and the cycle starts again. And that's not uncommon for kokanee and sockeye to do that.
And I might add that Crater Lake's zooplankton community is very unusual for a large high mountain lake. There are very few large zooplanktons, it's the only lake that I know of that doesn't have any pelagic copepods, which is, a large zooplankton.
Oh, okay. Let's walk through this slowly. Zooplankton, and we're talking microscopic creatures like in the ocean?
Microscopic, you can see them with the larger ones you can see with the naked eye. Mm-hmm. And copepods are one of the larger plankton that that live out in the pelagic area.
My memory of copepods is they look sort of like miniature crayfish or something. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, so the crayfish are put there to feed the fish, is that right?
That's correct.
All right, so this was good eating for the kokanee salmon for a long time and probably still is then.
Yeah, it's the rainbow trout in particular are very happy with the crayfish, and populations of trout are doing better than they probably ever have.
Is this a pretty common thing? I mean, this happened a lot, it seemed like, through the 19th and 20th centuries. I remember reading some brochure from Crater Lake early in the 20th about, we've stocked it to be a sportsman's paradise. That seems like a pretty common thing back then.
It's a very common theme, and it was common in the 1800s. You know, the West Coast wasn't very well populated at that time, and these people that were trying to promote Crater Lake for its aesthetic beauty and preserve and protect it for future generations, ironically, thought it would be a better place for visitors to come, for the gentlemen visitors from the East Coast to travel by train and stay in a great lodge and catch fish and have it cooked by a chef in the great lodge that evening.
Well, those were the days. We were talking about what has happened then because of the stocking of Crater Lake with fish and crayfish. Mark Buktenica is an aquatic ecologist at the park. Scott Gerdner on the phone is a fisheries biologist. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So you mentioned that salamanders, that kind of thing, were going to be the top of the food chain. So the Mazama Newt was really in charge of the lake, it sounds like, for eons.
Yeah, the Mazama Newt was the top predator in Crater Lake for thousands of years. It's related to the rough-skinned newt, but it apparently found its way into the caldera, into Crater Lake, thousands of years ago, where it's since differentiated from the common rough-skinned newt. The main differences in the Mazama Newt are that it's losing its orange coloration on its belly. The orange coloration is quite distinctive and is a warning to predators that the rough-skinned newt is toxic. But the Crater Lake or the Mazama Newt is also losing its toxicity because it never had any aquatic predators in Crater Lake.
So over the years, it evolved into something that was less of an issue for something to attack.
Yeah, exactly. There's a metabolic cost for producing poison, and if they don't have to spend those calories, it's a cost that they just don't need to spend.
So, Scott Gerdner, what are the crayfish doing to the newts in Crater Lake now?
Well, we started kind of looking at this in detail in 2008, and we noticed right away when we really looked spatially at where the crayfish were in the lake and where the newts were in the lake, that it looked like the crayfish were displacing the newts. If you went to an area that had crayfish, the newts were pretty much gone. Whereas if you went to an area of the shoreline that didn't have crayfish yet, the newts were still kind of in a healthy population. So we did some experimental work to try to get a little bit better handle on that using tanks where we replicated the lake and added crayfish to the tanks along with newts and studied what the crayfish would do to the newts. And it looks like they displace them physically. They're just more aggressive, and the newts will mostly swim away from the crayfish when disturbed. And then the crayfish can also predate on them, directly, eat the newts, and apparently without any issues from the toxin. Since their toxin levels are so low, it doesn't hurt the crayfish to eat them.
I saw some of the maps for places where you found crayfish and newts in 2008 and the more recent versions of those, and so it's rather striking. It looks like the crayfish are about 75% of the lake shore and newts the remaining 25%.
Yeah, that's right. And when we first looked at it in 2008, crayfish occupied about 40 to 50% of the lake shore, and since then that has increased to about 75%, and the area of the newts seems to be shrinking as the crayfish are slowly expanding around the shoreline.
So just in general, Mark, how tricky a process is it to try to encourage the flourishing of one species and try to suppress the population of another?
In this case, it's going to be extremely challenging. We held a workshop this August of experts on crayfish and salamanders at Crater Lake, and I think they agreed that if we did nothing, we're likely going to see the extinction of the Mazama newt. So we're pretty alarmed about this situation, and it doesn't look terribly hopeful, to be honest with you. Control measures for crayfish are not likely to be complete, and may in fact only slow down the invasion front of crayfish.
What has been tried so far?
Well, so far we've tried trapping with regular crayfish traps or minnow traps, and we did Scott ran a very extensive trapping on the small island of Phantom Ship within the lake for 3 years, and at the end of that project, the density of crayfish was actually greater than it was at the beginning of the project.
Really?
The traps are terribly inefficient. They don't attract crayfish from very far away from the traps. We've snorkeled around the traps, and you only need to go a meter or two away from the traps to find additional crayfish. And the densities are becoming increasingly higher and higher.
So, Scott, they've adapted really well, it sounds like, to this environment.
Yeah, that's normal for crayfish. They are very opportunistic, and once they get into a system, it is extremely difficult to control them, especially a system as large as Crater Lake. In smaller lakes, there has been some limited success in trying to control crayfish populations that have been introduced. But something as big as Crater Lake, with about 25 kilometers of shoreline, makes it very difficult to. Probably impossible to get rid of them, and even very difficult to slow their spread.
Scott Gerdner and Mark Buktenica are scientists working at Crater Lake National Park. We're talking about the effect of crayfish on the native populations of things like the Mazama newt. Of course, Crater Lake is in what was Mount Mazama before it blew its top several thousand years ago. Join us on the exchange with your comments and questions at 800-838-3760 over the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Are there any places where you can bring the newt numbers up? I mean, are there places that are hiding places where the crayfish can't get to, but the newts can?
Yeah, there still are places along the shore where crayfish haven't found their way yet. Crayfish were introduced on Wizard Island and at Cleetwood Cove on the north shore of the lake, and they've expanded all around the island, and they've expanded around the north shore, and they're working their way east and west. So there are areas in the lake that are still refuges for Mazama newts, and we also have these small isolated ponds along the edge of the lake at these moderate or lower lake elevations. And these isolated ponds currently don't have any crayfish, and they are really hot spots for all the native amphibians.
Are we talking about getting the Mazama newt listed under the Endangered Species Act? Is that on the horizon?
I think it's a likely upcoming result.
But has the process even begun? Because it seems to take years and years for that to happen now.
No, the process has not begun at this point.
All right. Now, I understand, too, that, Scott Gerdner, there's a broader concern about the lake's water quality if the crayfish continue to run wild.
Yeah, there's some indications in other systems that when crayfish move into an area, they tend to eat a lot of the insects that live on the bottom, and those insects tend to eat algae that grows on the shoreline and on the rocks, and so there's some thought that if crayfish move into an area and deplete the insects, that you can have an increase in algal growth on the rocks and potentially add more nutrients to the water such that the clarity can decrease. There's some suggestion of that in Lake Tahoe. We don't see that in Crater Lake. We don't see evidence of a change in water clarity, although there may be some evidence of additional algae growing on the rocks. But we don't have real good information on that in Crater Lake and whether or not that's a real possibility or not.
All right. So I understand that there's a discussion of the idea of barriers that would be placed on the lake floor. Close to the shores. How would those work, Mark?
Yeah, the idea behind these barriers is they would be 12 to 16 inch tall, probably sheet metal barriers, like roof flashing. Crayfish generally don't leave the lake floor, and they can't make it over these small, slick barriers. So in one sense, that sounds promising, but you know, on the other sense, we have crayfish going down to 800 feet in Crater Lake. And
so they can walk around the barriers.
So at those depths, they'll be able to walk around the barriers. As crayfish expand around the lake, they expand in the shallow water. So there is some hope that we can use these barriers to slow down the invasion front. As their density increases in the shallow water, they start moving down slope.
Into the deeper water.
Into the deeper water.
Around the barrier.
And perhaps we can use these barriers to help isolate some of these side pools as well.
Any concerns about unintended consequences, like having to pick the materials carefully for fear of what that might do to water quality?
I think that inert materials would be readily available, but we don't want to end up just littering the lake with aluminum or vinyl. I think it'll be a real challenge to anchor these onto the very mobile caldera walls.
No doubt. And is it a plan for sure going to happen, or is it still in the talking stages?
Well, we're in the process right now of developing proposals or in our request for proposals for to test some control measures to learn more about the life history of the Mazama newt before it disappears, and perhaps even to rear the Mazama newt.
All right, so a bit of a battle ahead for sure to see if we can reduce the crayfish population at Crater Lake or at least hold steady on the Mazama newt population to get that saved. Mark Buktenica is an aquatic ecologist. Scott Gerdner is a fisheries biologist. They both work for Crater Lake National Park and joined us on the Jefferson Exchange. Gentlemen, thanks.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good to have you here.